You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of OWW Radio. I'm your host, Alex Goff, and this week I am joined by the head contributor, the guy who runs Fight Game Blog, Garrett Gonzalez. And today we have a packed show filled with news, and I'm literally checking a news site right now to see if anything else is broken. Garrett, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. It was quite the day, specifically in MMA when it came to news. It was just so much stuff going on. Like, I look away from my Twitter, and then 20 more things happen.
Okay, so starting out in MMA, it came out a little while ago, so whenever this radio show hits, you'll know. Daniel Cormier will be replacing Alexander Gustafsson. It looks like Alexander Gustafsson tore his meniscus, and he is out of their big September rematch against John Jones, but they're sliding Daniel Cormier in. Garrett, what are your thoughts?
So we do know that it was an actual knee injury.
That is what I read earlier. Let me see if I can pull that back up while you give your thoughts.
Well, initially, my thought was, you know, it's a little peculiar that this far out, you know, that something had happened like that and that, you know, he wouldn't be able to sort of, you know, fix whatever the problem was. But, I mean, if it is a meniscus, then that makes a lot of sense as to why the fight it could be off. But, you know, it's also kind of weird because Cormier has similar knee injuries on his end, and he is taking the fight. So I'm not an expert in knee injuries and what you can do versus what you can't do. But so it's kind of, it was a little awkward, I thought, you know, for this fight, especially because if you remember, like, John Jones was like, no, I don't want to fight Gustafsson, I want to fight Cormier. And then, you know, all the MMA media, you know, kind of questioned that. And then Dana White, you know, kind of questioned that, it seemed. And then the fans kind of got all over him. And then, you know, so they put the fight together with Gustafsson, which had its own sort of weird issues with locale and where they were going to run it and whether it was going to be in Vegas or whether it was going to be in Canada. And then now we're sort of back to what originally John Jones wanted, and in some weird way, people are now even more excited. I'm really confused about how this whole thing happened.
Where's your excitement level at? I mean, this is, I guess, of all the fights we have pending in the UFC, the one that I think has the most anticipation, because Daniel Cormier specifically has gone in on John Jones, really wanted this fight. He told the story, you know, he was very ambiguous about why he disliked John Jones, and then he told the story about, it was, I believe, the Brock Lesnar fight. He saw John Jones backstage, and John had made a comment saying he didn't have enough cauliflower ear to take him down. John didn't recognize him as being the 2004 Olympic wrestling captain, 2000 Olympic team member. And that's where Daniel Cormier says the beef started. Where's your anticipation level, Garrett?
So I would say, from a hype and marketing perspective, this is probably the better fight, and it's because Cormier, I think, is going to, he's going to push it. He's going to do the social media stuff. He's very eloquent in interviews. He has the UFC Tonight seat, you know, to push whatever they want with them. As a styles clash, I think the Gustafsson-Jones fight is a much better, at least on paper, is a much better fight from an entertainment style, from, you know, especially after their first fight. And probably, you know, if you're looking at who has the best chance of winning, I think it's close, though, because of what Gustafsson was able to prove, you kind of have to give him the slight edge as far as who has the best chance. Now, you know, Cormier could definitely make this fight ugly, so aesthetically, it's probably not as good of a fight as the Gustafsson-Jones fight, but from the hype perspective, I expect it to be a lot better.
You know, what's interesting is that hypothetically, like if I could imagine a style that I think would do well against Jon Jones, it would be someone like Daniel Cormier, who is aggressive about putting people into the fence. And part of Daniel Cormier's style is that he makes you carry his weight the entire fight, right? So he leans into you against the cage, very similar to his training partner and UFC heavyweight champion, Cain Velasquez, where they make you carry them the entire fight. They separate, strike, back to carrying them. And seemingly, if you don't have the genetic capabilities of, or the genetic gifts that Alex Gustafsson has, which is the reach, a style like Cormier's, I think, would be effective against Jon Jones. Where do you see fan interest as far as, you know, we know that there's a rivalry between the two guys. Daniel Cormier is going to have opportunities to promote it. He's well-spoken. But do you think fans believe that the 35-year-old has an opportunity to beat Jon Jones?
Well, this is where something like the Countdown special or the Primetime special that they used to do, this is where that stuff matters, and where I'm going to guess that, you know, they're not going to bring back Primetime for this show. But I think the people need to know Daniel Cormier a little better, and because he has such a great personality, I think he would do wonders on a Primetime series. But because of the, you know, the lack of reach that FS1 has, it's probably a money-losing kind of thing. But, you know, the Countdown should be really good. But then again, like, who watches that? You know, I will watch it on YouTube more than likely. But, you know, it's those types of things that the UFC used to do so well that they don't really have the opportunity to do, to where I think Cormier could come out, you know, as such a huge star if those opportunities were there. Jones, you know, has just about as much visibility of any UFC fighter out there, not named Ronda Rousey. So, you know, from his end, just his name value alone, you know, he's going to bring in, you know, his side of things. But I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, this fight could be so much bigger than it eventually will be. But the channels aren't there for Cormier to utilize.
What is it about Jon Jones that you think that really, I mean, he's being put in a lot of really good positions. What do you think it is about Jon Jones that maybe he hasn't reached the level of stardom as fighters in the past? I mean, obviously, we talked about the vehicles like Countdowns and such, but Jon Jones is a fighter as a personality. What is it about him do you think that he hasn't gotten over?
Well, I mean, I think he's over to an extent. He's surely, you know, I think people see him as the greatest fighter in the game at this point. You know, I think the main problem with him is the Rashad thing. You know, Rashad basically, you know, it was like Jay-Z versus Nas. You know, Rashad basically went up to Jon Jones and was like, "We don't believe you. You need more people. Like, you're not who you say you are. You're purporting this image, and I know the true Jon Jones." And so he comes off fake. You know, I've heard stories of stuff that happened on Tough where, you know, maybe he wasn't the best coach that they wanted to portray him as, or maybe he wasn't, you know, doing everything as perfectly as he was produced. So I think that stuff just comes through. Like, he's not a good enough actor. He's not a good enough character, personality-wise, to carry, you know, whatever he's trying to portray. I think he just needs to be a little bit more real to who he is. The stuff like, you know, posting something on Instagram and not really understanding, you know, what's going to happen when he does that and then pulling it, that stuff comes across as, you know, you can see through people like that. You and I know people who are like that, and we don't like those people. So I think that's what it is. Like, if he was just, you know, whoever is pushing him in these directions, you know, it's the old wrestling thing, right? It's like, you know, they say what wrestlers are most effective, and they say the guys who are themselves and they just dial it up as much as possible. I think if Jon Jones stopped trying to be, you know, what he believes Jon Jones should be, and instead just, you know, acted himself, he would probably be a really good, you know, not quite of the Floyd Mayweather type of heel or type of, you know, bad guy, but I think he would just be more believable and less fake, and I think the audience or the public would actually, you know, get behind that a little bit more.
You know, what's interesting is that I had the opportunity to speak to someone that was training at Jackson Winklejohn at the time the Rashad John Jones situation went down. And the way the person explained it to me is that they believe that Errol Hawani started the whole thing. They really feel like Ariel put John Jones in a situation where he answered a question maybe not the best way, and that caused the giant rift.
I don't even remember the segment.
So basically, Errol Hawani had asked him, would he ever consider fighting Rashad Evans? And John Jones had answered the question that he would be willing to do whatever Dana White and the company had asked him to do, which is interesting now looking back, because John Jones is, turning down a replacement led to the cancellation of one of the UFCs. So it's interesting that, yeah, so that was his response to the answer. And Rashad at the time had considered dropping to 185 because he'd said, I wouldn't fight John Jones as a training partner. And when John said he was willing to fight him, Rashad said, okay, well, I feel like you turned your back on everything we'd agreed to.
Right. At that point, he's really young, right? His career is blossoming and taking off like crazy. And there are responsibilities that come with that. So he probably just mishandled that situation and probably really, in the back of Rashad's mind, maybe he didn't really want to have a piece of the guy anyways. But John has been in the MMA limelight now, for, I don't know, it's, what is it, like 4 years now or however long he's been one of the top guys. He has the ability to not be like that anymore. To blame it on something that happened X number of years ago, like, okay, maybe that's the impetus. But John Jones is a grown man, and he can, he can change the way that people see through him if he feels that, it's a big deal. And maybe to him, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he's like, hey, I'm just going to go out there, I'm going to fight, and, I don't really need to do, this, that, and the other thing to make people really care. I'm just going to continue winning. And, I think that there was a point in time where we looked at Anderson Silva and we're like, this guy really doesn't understand how to market himself because he's the greatest fighter alive, yet his style at times can be so unlikable, and his, the lack of competition in his division just, is not there. And at some point he figured it out. And, a lot of that has to do with Chael Sonnen, bringing that out of him. But, I would say the last 3 years of Anderson Silva was, somebody who really understood what the public wanted out of him. And he figured out how to give it to them, and because of that, he was doing a lot better business wise, when it came to drawing buys and stuff, and that still can happen for Jones. He's still young and he's so good, beating someone like Daniel Cormier and doing it in a way that is impressive. Should come a long way. The way that he beat Alexander Gustafsson, which, a lot of people saying that Gustafsson won. Okay, like maybe you do believe that, but you can't take it away from Jones that he stuck in there and he hung in there like a champ, like a champion does. And then sort of what did he do after that? He didn't really do anything to to build off of this new sort of, not only is he a brilliant fighter, but he's also tough as nails. Like, he didn't really take advantage of that, and I think that was a miss on his end, and his PR team or his marketing team or whatever. They should have taken advantage of that, and they didn't for whatever reason.
What I find interesting is that he, as the up-and-comer guy who was the phenom, almost felt like you were rooting for him until the Rashad situation. And then that's where he kind of took a turn, and then that's almost where maybe he lost a sense of credibility with the fan base. I mean, would you agree with that? Because when he fought Ryan Bader and won, and Joe Rogan offered him the title shot, I think that's one of the, it ranks up there to me with the GSP begging for the title shot. And then he fought Shogun Hua, And then after that, the Rashad situation happened, and almost like the fans, they didn't believe what they were being sold, and so they kind of turned on them. Do you feel that?
Yeah, and one thing that also happened that maybe was not as super publicized, but, you know, he had the car wreck with, I guess, two or three females who were not his the mother of his kid, and that, you know, that was another thing that was like, okay, like, who is this guy? You know, he purports this character or this mentality, and yet on the flip side he does something a little bit different. Now if that doesn't happen, and you know, maybe this thing where Rashad basically drags his name in the mud for, you know, for 3 months, if that doesn't happen either, maybe we feel differently about him, because you're right. We were rooting for him all the way. And, the UFC did such a great job in, you know, pushing him to where it felt special. It felt like, wow, we are seeing something that doesn't happen very often in this sport. Usually guys have to come in, you know, outside of you know, someone like a BJ Penn or a couple of other guys who have been able to do so well at a young age. I'm talking about, you know, more so in today's MMA where it's a little bit harder. But, you know, we felt like we were seeing something special. We felt like this guy is someone who we've seen from the very beginning, and he sort of feels like our own, and he was going to get his chance, and he did. And he did everything, you know, from a fighting perspective, he did everything correctly. He won impressively. You know, he didn't go out and you know, push these guys around for 5 rounds and take a decision. He beat guys and he submitted guys. You know, the Machida fight. You know, Machida, who we just saw give Chris Weidman a hell of a fight. Both of us were live at UFC 175. You know, John Jones made, you know, Machida look not at his level when they fought. So many good things that he did, and it just goes to show you how important the personality and the belief in someone being real and being who they say they are counts, you know, in just public perception.
If I could find a transition here, Monday Night Raw. I wrote a piece for Online World of Wrestling. It should be posted any day now, where basically I had said that when I had Ben Miller on a few months ago, we had speculated that WWE was kind of move away from the big event promotion, kind of move more toward, you know, promotion for the network, but absent of the big event. The big event was going to be part of the buffet, per se, right? But with the network numbers being low, it seems like WWE is making the big event even more important. And the SummerSlam build on Monday was phenomenal and one of the best builds I can remember for a non-WrestleMania show maybe in years. So what were your overall thoughts on Raw? And of the moments that stuck out, can you name the one that was really stuck out to you?
Well, I think the Stephanie McMahon's performance in the arrest situation with Brie Bella was absolutely phenomenal. Like, I've never seen her better in a role than she was on Monday night, you know, starting from, you know, the early segment where she was egging on Brie and then slapped Brie, and then after the Flo Rida segment where, you know, she got arrested. Like, that was absolutely fabulous. And not to say that it overshadowed sort of the main event segment, but that's the thing that I think most people remembered. As far as the Brock thing, you know, it's kind of hard because those of us who follow this so closely, you know, we've known for so long that this was the way that they were going to go. So, you know, we don't have necessarily that surprise factor. But, you know, I'm such a big Brock Lesnar fan that, you know, to me, this is such a big thing because I want to, you know, I always love seeing him. And I remember how good that match with Cena was at Extreme Rules several years ago. So I'm fired up for it. Now, I'm, you know, just sort of clicking around and asking people. And, you know, some people don't like the idea that Brock comes in, you know, once every 3 or 4 months and, you know, just slides into the main event or slides into a big match, has his match, and then leaves. Like, they feel like if they invest the time into Brock Lesnar, he's just going to leave, and then they're going to be like, oh, you know, why did we wait for that to happen again? So this thing is a little bit different because it sounds like he's going to be around for 2 months at least, 2 or 3 months at least. And so, you know, we will have an opportunity to kind of, you know, to sit with him and watch him for do what he does best, you know, for a few weeks. But I think that I think it was strong. And you know, it's actually a great thing that you brought up, because I was just writing about this the other day because of the whole Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose angle, in that, you know, it was such a waste for WWE to not have that match, because, like you said, you know, the subscription numbers are maybe not as good as they would want. And you would think that the way to increase the subscription numbers is to just continue having blow-away pay-per-views. And by taking the best match off of your pay-per-view, you basically told the audience that, well, you know, because we only charge you $10, we really don't have to, you know, we don't have to go with what we promised. And you're going to watch anyways, and you're going to come back for SummerSlam because it's going to be huge and it'll be great. And, you know, we'll take the L on this one. And I don't think that's the right message. The right message has to be, every week you're going to get a pay-per-view that you're going to be so happy that you only paid $10 for. You're going to tell all your friends that this is the, you know, that this is such a value. Like, we're going to give you $50 worth for your $10 worth every month. And that's just going to be how we continue to build this thing by word of mouth. And that was exactly the opposite message that they gave on Sunday night.
Yeah, quickly on that. I mean, I think you made an excellent point. But, yeah, I mean, just as a rule, I mean, you don't promote a professional wrestling match on a pay event unless you plan on delivering that match, because you have 4 weeks of television where you can literally do the same thing, but people aren't paying for the product. So that's when you do your, you know, tonight we're going to have this match. Oh, you know, we're not. And then at the pay-per-view, you make people pay for it. One last thing. Considering you're local, this will be the last question. You're a local guy, and this Saturday, UFC is running a Fox show in your neighborhood. Now, I've received emails from Ticketmaster offering discounted tickets, which leads me to believe, I haven't checked Ticketmaster recently, but I'm leading me to believe tickets aren't moving well. Do you believe that low, or maybe tickets not moving well, will have any reflection in the viewership?
I don't expect the viewership to be anything spectacular. I think what's going to be interesting about this rating is Matt Brown has been put on many of these Fox shows. So I'd be interested to see if by sort of gradually moving him up the, you know, up the ramp as far as, you know, he's on an opening match, and then he's in a second match from the bottom. Now he's in the main event. How effective has it been for him to be on these Fox shows? Because as we saw with the last Benson Henderson rating, it seemed that because he had so much visibility on Fox, that translated into a good rating, or a better than expected rating for FS1. So I wonder if that's going to be the same for Matt Brown. And Robbie Lawler was in the main event, you know, on a pay-per-view that did, I don't know, 300,000 buys or whatever. And while, you know, that's not a great number, it's a solid number, and he's a title contender. So while I don't expect the ratings to, you know, to surprise anyone or to go over the top, I think it's a solid main event. But the one thing that they're missing with these Fox shows, and it's because they're drawn so thin on main events, is they needed, I don't know if it's necessarily a title fight, because I don't think you could have put, you know, just a Demetrius Johnson fight on here and it would make any sort of difference. But they need one of their guys who, maybe it's an older guy, you know, maybe this is where you should have put BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, but someone who is you can go to the well with and bring older UFC viewers back for, you know, for one time to see the new product. You know, I mentioned BJ because, you know, he seems to be a guy who inspires, you know, people to watch, if you know, especially the older folks, but somebody like a Rampage Jackson, you know, when they used to put him in this role where you could have got the casual fan to come on, because from what it seems like, this is like a hardcore UFC fan show, first and foremost. And you know, from the San Jose perspective, I think the you know, they'll probably do between 6,000 and 8,000, but they don't even really, they haven't really pushed, you know, Josh Thompson as a local draw like they could have. You know, his match got changed, but it seems like an easy sort of win for them to really promote Thompson hard, especially after he lost that really close fight to Benson Henderson that people thought he won. Like, it would be, you know, he should be front and center on the promotion, at least locally, for this, and I don't feel like they've taken advantage of that.
Now, checking my television guide, one last question about the show. I noticed that they have the prelims airing on Fox before the main card. Do you think that that's significant, or do you think they'll have any kind of effect? Because I wonder if they'll be able to sustain a rating on Fox when they give multiple hours of fights.
Yeah, that's a weird one, because if you remember, like, the very first UFC show, like, they didn't want to give you anything more than just the main event. And, you know, they didn't want to give you anything more than just, you know, Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. And so now they're adding everything to Fox, which I don't think it's going to help. You know, I don't think it's going to, you know, how many people, casual fans aren't going to watch 4 hours of MMA. You know, they may tune in for the main event, but it seems like they're really going after the hardcore audience here. And maybe that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to figure out what is the temperature, you know, for a Fox show when it comes to the hardcore audience. And, you know, maybe this is some sort of experiment for that.
I did find it interesting the other day when I was watching the All-Star game, and the first item they listed that they have a license on is the UFC. I thought that was very interesting before they even listed the NFL. But, Garrett, thank you very much for joining me tonight. Also this week, you can check out Fight Game Blog, where I'll be a guest on Garrett's podcast. And, Garrett, if they want to hear that podcast with you and I, if they want more of us, where we'll be discussing a couple different topics, or if they just want to read your writings, where can they go?
So fightgameblog.com is the place to go. We've been a little bit pro wrestling heavy this week, so I think for your audience, you know, that's actually a pretty good thing. It just seems like I've been a little bit more inspired to write about WWE lately than a lot of other things. But, you know, on Twitter, we have the at Fight Game Blog, and then the Facebook page is facebook.com/Fight Game Blog. And the other thing that you're also going to be participating in, you know, in addition to the podcast, is we'll have the preview of the UFC on Fox show, where all of us will have our picks, and we'll, you know, we have our little ranking system and stuff, and we kind of have fun with that. So that'll be up probably Friday morning, I would believe.
We put our money where our mouth is. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us. This has been OWW Radio, and have a good week.
All right, well, that's okay.